Yeah, I guess they call this a workshop, and I know sometimes it's kind of more of a performance or a showcase, but how many of you are guitar players or mandolin players? Show of hands. That's pretty good. I know it's a pretty unsavory bunch. Well, I figured we'd talk some, if the rest of you can stand it, maybe we'll talk a little bit about how we approach playing. Maybe start with talking a little about the right hand technique. I teach a lot of lessons down in Brooklyn, New York. I know Tony teaches. Go Red Sox. Go Bruins. Go Giants. Sports animosities, it's a disaster already.
Get on this side.
Anyhow, but I know at least in bluegrass music, a lot of people, you're trying to figure out how to work a little piece of plastic in your hand. It's definitely a challenge. And one thing that I've learned in years of playing, doing flat picking music, is that a flat pick is an infinitely inferior mode of playing an instrument than a bow. So, I know that I think the guitar, a lot of flat picking styles, as I understand it, kind of comes from trying to do what Phil can do and what banjo can do. And historically, at least in bluegrass music, the flat picking style kind of developed later than mandolin style, and well, certainly fiddle style it goes back for hundreds and hundreds of years and came over from the British Isles, but then you had fiddle and banjo duets, and then started adding mandolin. And you can really say Bill Monroe was probably the first serious flat picker for tunes, but then guitar kind of came on later. You start getting like George Scheffler and Doc Watson.
And then Doc Watson I didn't hear that until I was in college, but another Riley Puckett and the Skillet Lickers.
Absolutely.
Is another important guitar movement.
That's true. Riley's great, and he's got a face made for radio.
Radio.
You can hear a lot of recordings of Skillet Lickers with Riley Puckett, and you should definitely go ahead and do that. But I know the bluegrass guitar kind of came about. It wasn't a lead instrument until, not in any serious way, until really George Scheffler and Doc Watson. It was really hard for it to cut through a band setting and hold its own next to those other instruments, which are a lot louder. But as a result of it coming along later, guitar style imitates fiddle and the banjo and the mandolin, and the bass, if you think about it. It really imitates all the other instruments, and what comes out hopefully is its own thing, but there's a lot of different ways to approach flat picking, and I thought maybe we could to talk a little bit about that. And it's real different for acoustic and for electric. So maybe I don't know, Tony, you want to go first? Go ahead. I was just gabbing.
It sounded good. And you wanted to talk about right hand technique, and we have a different right hand technique, and it's a good example of how there are a few good right hand techniques. What I like to do. I like to make sure that I have a connection to the top of the instrument, either putting my wrist on the bridge, which I don't do personally, but I know many, many people that do, or putting my fingers on the pick guard. And I find that that's a necessary evil for me to play with the accuracy that I want to have. But I think that might be a little different than what you choose to do.
Yeah, definitely. It's I think when you're approaching flat picking, you have to kind of make priorities and that are go along with how you hear music and how you want to sound and what you're trying to do. I approach flat picking very much from the Bill Monroe school as much as I can. There are a few recordings of some interviews with Bill. He didn't really talk much about his playing, and there's actually some pretty funny instructional videos out there where slow it down, Bill. Can you play that again? No, can you play it again a little slower? talk much about what he was doing, but
you know how it's supposed to sound. Just make it sound that way.
Maybe after ask you. No, but there's a great collection of Bill Monroe live recordings on Smithsonian Folkways called Off the Record, and the very last one on there, there's this interview segment with Bill where he's talking about when he was learning to play the fiddle, when he was learning to play the mandolin. He learned from his Uncle Pen, who's a great old-time fiddler, and he's talking about how they, you know, follow Uncle Pen around the backwoods, and you know, they want to have a square dance. As long as you can find a good fiddler, that you're good, because fiddle style is on its own just so rhythmically propulsive that you don't really need a backup band if you have a good fiddler, because fiddler players are able to play melody, and then they might on the drone string be playing other rhythms, and it's very full. It's very, you know, makes, as Birch, Bill's brother said, it just put the music in the people's feet. But anyways, so Bill's talking about he was trying to imitate the shuffle of the fiddle bow with the flat pick. And he's like, you can't shuffle with the pick like you can with the bow. And then he would demonstrate how he did exactly that. But if you watch Bill play, he's not anchoring. He closes his hand when he plays single notes, I should say. And sometimes he'll do different things when he's strumming, but he'll close his hand, and he's got this tremendous movement off of his wrist. That if you watch close up, I mean, his melodies are kind of like that. And what I think he's doing, just from watching and listening to him, is I think he's really trying to let the weight of the hand, or the hand, when the hand's closed like that, kind of takes on a weight and inertia. If it's hinging freely, then it can kind of fly through space and take on this additional set of accents and a certain propulsion that comes just from the weight of the hand moving around, that you can't really get the same sound if you're kind of clamped down. So, I'll maybe demonstrate a little bit what I'm talking about. I don't know if you'll be able to hear it much coming through the microphone, but if you're sitting in a room, you can kind of hear a difference. But in fact, play not much movement and clamp down, you play clean and fast and even. I'm willing to play a lot of wrong notes and sound really messy in the service of trying to get my hand open, because I want to prioritize that shuffle. And so if I were practiced more, I'd probably be able to play clean and get that shuffle. But anyways, choose your battles. Very loud, and so I think I had to develop a guitar style that wasn't covered up by my loud high notes. So that's, you know, but that's kind of where I started approaching it. But.
Now that you've given that one, I'll just say one other part about the history of flat picking that we didn't get to in terms of a little more modern is the playing of Tony Rice, who was informed quite heavily by Doc Watson and Clarence White and George Shuffler and Norman Blake and all the folks, Dave Ferry, the folks that came before him. And he sort of, when he became well-known in the 70s, really lit the bluegrass guitar world on fire. And up until Tony Rice, a few bands, notable bands, had really wonderful lead guitar players, but most often the guitar was limited to rhythm and lead vocalists. And after Tony Rice, I think you can find most modern bluegrass bands have lead guitar, and that's a singular achievement of his that can never be done again. It's already done now. It's been added to the modern bluegrass sound, the lead guitar. And while personally I think I'm trying to be like postmodern and try to do something a little that's way informed by what Tony Rice did, but hopefully is a little different, it's still an important icon.
One thing I gotta say about Tony Rice is just, you know, he's a great lead player, but if you ever, you gotta listen to his records with headphones and listen to what he's doing behind the other musicians, because that guy is just a phenomenal rhythm guitar player, and that's something that people don't always tune into. But if you really, really listen to how he's supporting other instruments, I consider him to be as revolutionary as a rhythm guitarist as he is as a lead, if not more. He's really...
Absolutely.
His sense of timing is great.
So he, I think most people answer his pinky. Not that it matters. There's a lot of, I think the important point is there's a lot of great ways to achieve a lot of different sounds. I found personally that I have such a hard time playing free. As wonderful as I know you make it sound, and Chris and some other folks are so successful with it, I don't have the ability to do that. So for me, by planting, it allows me to actually play really a lot harder because I have the accuracy to get the string I want, and I can actually play much louder planting, which is bizarre, and it's because that's what I work on.
Play something
then. Do y'all want to hear music? Sorry.
If you learn to play guitar, learn to play in a bunch of different keys. Learn to play A tunes and go to A, and E tunes and E, and occasionally get an F or a B flat tune. And I think you learn a lot more about the guitar if you learn to get around in different keys. I gotta say, put the capo on. There's a certain sound, certain thing you can do playing out of G and C that you just can't get that sound in other keys. But other keys have their benefits as well. So I encourage you to explore. Is it not a million miles an hour? So actually, you know what? I want to dedicate this song to Kenny Baker, who the greatest bluegrass killer, who died just about a week ago, and he played the fiddle on the original recording of this song. So we'll all miss him. And I think we should have had one way we could approach this is to play the entire Kenny Baker Plays Bill Monroe album, start to finish. That would be, I think, a good workshop. Maybe we'll come back. For instrumental bluegrass, for me, that's the greatest instrumental bluegrass record. It's Kenny Baker Plays Bill Monroe.